Hi, this is Gary Washburn, pastor of Grace Tabernacle. Thank you for tuning to our podcast today. Our hope is that this message inspires you and builds your faith. For more information about Grace Tabernacle and our ministries, please go to gracetab.org and like us on Facebook. Now, may the message feed your soul.
Yep, you're one.
Hello. Oh, there it is. Okay.
It's much better than the speaker that we used to have come to the church. And one of the deacons would always run up to help her, and she'd always go, "Yeah, I've always been told it takes a man to turn you on."
Oh.
So it's just me.
Okay, there's an interesting note to start on. So tonight I want to share with you the story of my calling to come to serve the church. So how I got into working at a church. So a lot of you know who I am. I'm Jenny, I'm the administrator here, and I've been at the church for 20 years. But a lot of you don't know the journey I took to get here. But God has a way to help you realize the plans he has for you. So the scripture says, "I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord," in Jeremiah 29:11. Well, so I started out when I was 7 years old. I received Christ into my heart at a very young age, and I actually received my prayer language at the same time. My mom had gotten saved around that time, and she took us to a spirit-filled church, and I went forward and received Christ. And my dad, however, was a very staunch Lutheran, so my upbringing was very different in that God was gearing me up to be in church a lot, because I went to the 8 a.m. Lutheran church and the 10:30 Assembly of God service every Sunday. So very diverse upbringing. My dad did get saved when I was 16, so we all started attending church. We always attended church with Dad at the Lutheran church every Sunday. My mom always wanted to honor my dad, so we did that. So when I was 11 years old, I was diagnosed with scoliosis, and I was told I had to wear a full body brace for 23 hours a day, only to take it off to do physical therapy or take a bath. So that started in middle school. And as you all know, middle school is not the place to start something like that. It was a very bad experience for me in a lot of ways, but I did love sports. So I really threw myself into sports. So I played basketball, volleyball, track, softball. In fact, I was even captain of my basketball team while wearing the brace. But things kind of turned for the worse when I got old enough to be in high school, because I was moving to a different school, a larger school, still had my brace. But that my freshman year, at the very beginning of the year, I was told I would have to have major surgery, and they were going to fuse my entire spine and put two metal rods in. So I completely missed half of my freshman year of high school. I was in the hospital for 5 weeks. They said it would take 2 years for my spine to fuse, so no more sports. They said I had to wear the brace for 24 hours a day now as a cast instead of just wearing it 23 hours a day. So needless to say, high school was much worse than middle school in that all the friends I had in middle school now no longer would talk to me. They wouldn't eat lunch with me, they wouldn't talk to me. I was the kid with the brace. They didn't really want to associate with me. So I knew this day was kind of crushed, and I really had a very lonely time in high school. I really didn't have any friends to speak of. Well, after I finally got out of high school, I got my brace off, a new lease on life, and I got a job working in a factory. And in fact, I worked at a ruler, level, and yardstick factory. It's one of these places that they still sell them. I see them in the store. But what factory life is are days of repetition of doing the same thing over and over and over and over and over and over again. So my job was to be at the end of the line. There's like a 100-foot machine in front of me. A girl was at the other end, and she was silk screening the numbers onto the yardstick. And my job was to catch it off the other side, inspect it, make sure all the stuff was there, put it in a box, tape the box shut, put it on a skid. So I got my timing down pretty good. Well, one day they put in another machine right next to me, a little longer, a little further back, and I thought, oh, yay, somebody to work with. I'm not going to be all alone over here anymore. And the management came one day and said, "Oh, no, we're not hiring somebody else to do that machine. You're also doing that machine." Wow. So think of Lucille Ball in the Chocolate Factory scenario. So it wouldn't have been so bad if they were both the same. One was a little longer, so you had to kind of keep over your shoulder. But the other thing was, one had a cooling unit on it, and one didn't. So one came off hot, and one came off cold. So I would wear gloves, and that was fine, fine doing the gloves until you had to take the gloves off to tape something shut, and then you look over there, and you're like running over here. Oh my gosh, I'm gonna, I caught it. Okay, I can run back over here. But then you lose your timing, and oh, I forgot to take the gloves off. I'm burning my hands, dropping things, trying to catch back and forth. So I'm running back and forth, and you're hearing bam on the concrete over and over again, because it's really loud in a factory when metal hits the concrete floor. Everybody in the factory is just laughing because I'm not keeping up with the machines. But I was pretty determined. By the end of that summer, I could keep up with both those machines. But so that's kind of like, I just want to share a little bit about factory life. Well, factory life kind of encouraged me to go to college. after that, I worked at a spring factory for a while too. So in between that time, I decided to save up my money, and I was going to go to college, and I decided to get a commercial art degree because I loved art. Many of you know my mom paints, and my grandfather painted, and his father painted, so there's a lot of art in my family. So I applied around, and I got accepted at Oral Roberts University. But I was a little older than the rest of the students. I already was 21 years old by the time I decided to go to college. I've been working in factories for a few years at this point. So, but when I got my freshman year, part of my freshman year, my dad was diagnosed with cancer. And so I had to kind of decide if I was going to stay in school or not stay in school. And we talked about it, and I decided I was going to stay in school, but it was kind of on me to pay for school because of medical bills and such. So I switched majors at that point because school came up with a brand new major called Broadcast Design, Art for Television and Film. To me, that was like, wow, I love technology, I love art, this is the great thing. The only problem is that is a double major. So they said, it'll probably take you 5 years to finish that major. And I was like, I can't afford 5 years of college. Well, anyway, at the time I had gotten a work-study job and I was working in the library at the school. It was a children's book library, so I was a librarian in a children's library for student teachers and teachers in the community. So I did that for a while, and that was one of my jobs, job number one. So one day I was sitting in one of my classes, and a professor came up to me and said, I want you to go down to this certain building and talk to this gentleman after class. I have a note for you to go to his office. I was like, I don't know who this man is. I went down to the office, and I introduced myself, and he said, well, I'm so-and-so, and I just wanted you to know that you came to me highly recommended, and I want to offer you a job working in the television department. And I was like, yay, this is also more money. So now, job number two. I kept my other job because I still had to pay for school. So after that, money was still tight, and I got an art scholarship in the art department, and my professor in the art department hired me to work in his department, tutoring students, job number three. So I worked three jobs, did a full load so I could get done and graduate in 4 years, which I did do. I did pay for school for a while after that, but that's another story. So every summer, though, while I was in college, I would go back and work in the factory. The spring factory people said, whenever you come back, you'll always have a job here. So I was like, okay, so I'd go back every summer and have a guaranteed job. But every time I went back, everybody was sitting in the same seats, talking about the same thing that they were talking about when I left in the fall. And I was like, oh my gosh, I cannot do this forever. So I applied around and I got a job at a children's book publishing company, which was appropriate since I was a librarian and I worked in children's book. And one of my arts thing was to be a children's book illustrator. And I had written a couple books in college and I thought, ooh, maybe I can get something published. No. They hired me to work in sales, in answering on the phone, calling librarians to sell them children's books and VHS tapes, which I was familiar with the other side of that. So what I learned there was that I am a terrible salesperson. I cannot sell anything. People say to me, no, and I say, okay, thank you, and hang up. And my boss would say, no, 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 no. When they say no, you say, hey, no, I got something else. I said, I can't do that. They said no. I know what they're like. I didn't want them to call me. I didn't want them to call them. So, but he was a very colorful character. Everybody in that place was a very colorful character. But anyway, he was a Vietnam vet, and he had one prosthetic leg that he always cut the pants off, and it was an American flag. So that was my supervisor, and he would get me to do his copying for him. I started typing his reports for him, and I was doing a lot of his job. But he would always tell everybody, Jenny's so great, she's my right leg, ha, 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 ha. So one day I get called to management. I'm like, oh my goodness, this is the end, because I have never made a commission in this job. So I thought, they're going to fire me, these people. So I was waiting for it, so I went in the office, and they said, okay, what we'd like to do is we want to transfer you to customer service, and we want to pay you a whole lot of money more. And I was like, yes. They said, we think you'd be really suited for that. So I got transferred to customer service, and I did not get fired. And I did that for a while. And in fact, I was promoted after that to go and work and do all their wholesale accounts for all the big book publishing companies. So that's where I was at that point in my life. During this time, there was a day when I was at the front desk, and they said, can you just for an hour or so answer the phones at the end of the day? I don't remember if she was going to a doctor's appointment or was out or something. So I was answering the phone, and a lawyer calls. And he said, hey, I just want to know when you guys are closing. And I said, 5:00. And he said, no, when are you closing permanently? And I said, I don't know anything about that. And he said, well, by law, they're legally required to let you know that they're in Chapter 11. Have they not told any of the employees this? And I said, no. He said, let me talk to the president. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm in trouble. So I transferred that to the president's office. Well, the next day, we did have a meeting letting us know that we were in Chapter 11, and people were starting to get laid off right and left. In fact, they laid off so many people, we were down to a skeleton crew, and I still had my job because I worked for the wholesale companies. But at the same time, my sister's church was having some kind of a event. I went to church with her one Sunday, and they said, hey, we need some volunteers to help out building our set for the Christmas or Easter production or whatever it was. And I said, well, I know how to build sets. I built a lot of sets when I worked in television, when I worked in the theatrical department. I said, I can teach them how to build flats and stuff. So for a couple of weeks, I would be there every night, and I was showing them how to build flats and paint sets and all that kind of thing. And one day, the pastor came up to me afterwards, and he said, hey, I would really like to hire you as an office administrator of the church. And I thought, I don't know if I have a job tomorrow or not. Maybe this would be a good thing to take this job. So that is how I wound up with working in churches for the last 31 years. That's where it began. So to go on from there, what I did learn a few things about working in a church. First thing that I learned is that God never intended his church to be run like a business. There's something you have to understand if you ever take a job working in a church. It is nothing like a secular world. I don't mean that sense, well, yay, I get to work with Christian people, it's fun. No, I mean in the sense that a church is nothing like a business in that we're dealing with people. It's a very different world. We don't deal in products, we work with people. In fact, it's a living, breathing entity. Churches are really very different than the secular world in that way. We deal with happiness, tragedy, anger, strife, love, laughter, tears, and it's a very precious commodity that we deal with, but it's not products. But I wasn't prepared for that. What I learned was working in ministry is not a 9-to-5 job. I was prepared to do a 9-to-5 job, like I'd always done, but I found myself working 60 hours a week, and I was the only person handling everything in every single department, and I was a bookkeeper. So everybody came to me with every single need. I thought I was hired to work for the pastor. No, I learned that when you're working at church, you're serving literally hundreds of people. You're working for 100 people at one time, and people with very real feelings. So I also learned another thing. Pastors are regular people, just like us, who are trying to fulfill their very deep calling. I think I had an idea of pastors when I started working there, but that changed, and I really understood them, who they are. They're just like us, but they have this deep calling that they're trying to fulfill. So we're dealing with people, not orders, not shipments, not products. And I thought to myself, wow, what have I gotten myself into? And I worked for that first church for 8 years. But there was a terrible season that happened in that church, and then it went through a terrible time when there was a moral failure within the church, not with the pastor, but within the church people, and everything went into a tailspin. The church people were leaving in droves, and the sheep were scattered, and it was sad, and it's very much like a family going through a divorce. You see, when there's a hurt in the church, it's very different than a business. It affects the entire family. Now, when a business happens like that, they just fire that person, they go on selling their products, but products don't get their feelings hurt. People do. So, during this time now, shortly after this, the pastor himself, he was going through a very hard time, and he eventually just resigned, and he went on to another church. But there was no pastor at this church at this time. So now I am the only full-time staff. There are a couple part-time people, one was a college student who came in, and some people did some stuff on Sundays, but it all fell to me. So I was doing everything. I was fixing ice dams on the roof of the church so the fellowship hall wouldn't flood. I was repairing the sump pump in the basement. I was not always paid because there wasn't always money to be paid. I was hiring guest speakers who were my friends and saying, hey, you're a chaplain at a prison, can you come and speak on Sunday? Because we don't have a pastor. Hey, other friends of mine who were in ministry or just lay people, and I would say, can you speak on Sunday? So my job was really doing everything. So needless to say, I was getting burned out, and my passion for working in the church was really starting to die. It really did. So, and it was just a very stressful time. People were always angry about something. The youth department was struggling. They were coming to me. Everybody's coming to me with needs that I didn't know how to fill. So finally, they got to a point where, I have to say, a few months at least, maybe more than that, had gone by, and they finally hired another pastor. So when a new pastor comes on staff, he gets to start over if he wants to. He can replace all the staff and hire new people. So me and the worship leader were good friends. She was just a college student at the time, and I wasn't much older than her at that time. And so we went in her office before we were supposed to meet with the new pastor to find out what our future was. We went in the office, we held hands together and said, God, please let him fire us. Amen. And so then we met with him, and he said, well, girls, I've been praying about it, and I really think that God wants me to keep you on staff. And I was like, oh, no. Oh, not this, Lord. So I thought, well, I guess God is telling me I have to stay. But my passion, again, for the church was not there anymore. So a couple of years had gone by, and finally the church was getting back into its groove and growing again, and the pastor was settled, so what happened was everything changed with a couple phone calls. So I'm trying to think of how the one. Okay, so the first thing, I'm sitting at my desk, and just to preface this, my parents are living in Florida at the time, and they're saying to me, oh, hey, you know, we go to this big Baptist church down here, and we'd love for you to come down here, and I bet you could get a job in the church. And I said to them, there, if I ever quit this job at this church, I am never working at another church again, just so you know that. So they would call me up and say, well, we'd love to have you down here, and I'm sure you could find a job in the church. Like, no, no. So anyway, the church finally had an opening, and they said, oh, you should send them your resume. And I said, no, I don't want to. But as parents are, they kept on it. And I said, you know, here's the first thing, Mom. I went to Oral Roberts University, and I work in Assembly of God Church. And they're Baptist. I don't think they're going to hire me. There's a very different dichotomy going on there. But anyway, to appease them, I sent in my resume. Never heard from that church again. It's been over 6 months. Wasn't thinking anything about it. So sitting at my desk, and the phone rings. It's the church in Florida, after all this time. And they said, hey, we were wondering if you were going to be in Florida anytime soon, and we'd like to interview you for a job. And I said, no. No, I don't plan on being in Florida anytime soon. Thinking, and I hung up the phone with them, and I was like, dodge a bullet. All right. So the second call came immediately. I mean, talking minutes, I'm hanging the phone, it rings again. And just a little preface here, too, is that I had been living in my apartment for 12 years, and recently my landlady had passed away. She was 90-some years old, and it was her daughter. Hi, Jenny. We just wanted to let you know we decided that we're going to sell the house, and you're going to have to find someplace else to live. And I was like, oh, I like my apartment. I'm not thinking about the church. So anyway, the next phone, I hit the phone, and it's Mom and Dad. And Dad's saying, well, hey, I've got cancer again. We really want you to come down and help us out. I hung up the phone and went, no, okay. So I knocked on my pastor's door, told him what happened, and said, I think I'm supposed to move to Florida. And he said, I think you're supposed to move to Florida too. So I gave them 6 weeks' notice, and I packed my things up, and we moved to Florida. Now, I got to Florida. We got to Florida on like a Sunday night, I think it was. Yeah, it was a Sunday night. And unpacking all of our stuff, and my parents checked the answering machine. And on the answering machine is a message from the church in Florida here, and saying, hey, we've been trying to get a hold of your daughter. Is there any way we can get a hold of her? Because we'd like to talk to her about a position. And I'm like, that is so weird. How do they know I'm in Florida? So anyway, I call the church the next day, and they say, oh, hey, would you come in for an interview today? I'm like, I just got to Florida yesterday. So I go in for an interview. They hired me on the spot, and I started working that Wednesday at a church. So my thinking is here, don't tell God what you don't want to do. So I started working at the church, and I started for a specific position, but they found out I have a lot of other skills, so I wound up working in their media department and other departments. I did several different things there. And I worked there for a few years, and to cut a long story short, I came here with Pastor Terry Wilkinson. If you want to know what happened with that, read Pastor Gary's book, but because that's all in there. So, well, when the church started here, I came to work in here, and then it was my job to help us get our 501c3, get our corporation paper started. I was setting up the sound equipment at 6 o'clock every Sunday morning. I was working in kids' church. I was cleaning the bathrooms. These were really all fond memories. I mean that in a good way. I really do mean they're fond memories. They're exciting when new life starts. And my heart for the church was coming back. It really came back at the church prior, at the first Florida church, of getting my love for working with people in the church back again. And so, but that's just the start of how it happened here. But I do need to tell you one other story, and that's about the story about how I met Brian. Now, if I hadn't come to Florida, I would never have met Brian, for starters. So God really had the big picture, not just working in a church figured out, but the big picture figured out. So at the time, I'm 40 years old at this time. I've been single all these years. And really, you know, you get to a point when you get older and you think, that single that long, I got a better chance of getting struck by lightning, you know. But no, but I really wasn't thinking about any long-term relationship. But there was a lady at the church here at the time who kept saying, oh, I know this guy named Brian Heiberger. You should meet him. You guys would hit it off so well. And I said, no, I'm not going on a blind date. Nobody wants that. Well, at the same time, there was a lady at Brian's church who knew my parents who said to Brian, you really have to meet Jenny Krieger. You really love her. She'd be great, and you guys should get together. And we were both like, and he was like, no. So neither of us have been married at all. We were both older, and we neither have been married. And so happened that on Pastor Gary's birthday, of all days, there was a joint church service between our church and their church. And so we agreed to meet that night. Not go on a date that night, just meet each other. So I went there and I got in the booth and I was running the PowerPoint slides for Pastor Gary like I do. And Brian was actually in the booth also running the lighting. And as you guys know, we're still in the booth together. So we really hit it off. He asked me to Chili's and we started dating. So on May 1st, then we were at a church service at the church, and there was a special guest speaker, and she was just wonderful. And everybody was at the altars, and it was a wonderful night. And me and Brian were up at the altar, and a person came up to me, and a friend of mine. She said, "The Lord just told me that Brian needs to tell you something tonight." And I said, thinking, "Well, how am I supposed to make that happen?" But as it was, I didn't have to. We were at the altars. I turned to Brian, and Brian has tears running down his eyes, and he looks at me and he says, "I love you." Wow. And I was like, thinking to myself, wow, I love you too. You know, I realized that I really did. And so on July 1st, oh, I must clarify something. During this time of dating, Brian never kissed me. And I always thought, does he like me? Are we just friends? Because usually, you know, if you kiss, that means something. But he never kissed me at all. So on July 1st, we went to the beach, and we've gone to the beach a number of times during the summer, and it was at Honeymoon Island, and he had said this particularly, leave the chairs in the car, and let's just go for a walk. So we're walking along the beach when I see my name in giant letters written in the sand. And I'm naive, I said, oh look, somebody spells their name the same way I do. But I want you to guys notice how big those letters are, because see the bench behind there? I mean, this is like aerial view stuff, that the airplane could go by and see this. So I'm walking along, and then it says, we walk a little farther, it says, Will. And we walk a little farther, and it says, You. And it says, Mary. And it says, Me, as we walk along. And then Brian turned and kneeled down, and he asked me to marry him that day. And I said, yes. And on the way home, I said to Brian, we stayed there and watched the sunset that night. And on the way home, I said, this day couldn't be any better. The only thing that would make it perfect would be if there were fireworks. And as we're driving down the road, fireworks start going off on both sides of the car. And I just thought, wow, God, you are amazing. So on December 31st of that same year, Brian and I were married right here with the first wedding in this church, 1 week after we got the keys to this building, and we had our very first kiss right here on this altar, the day of our wedding. We never kissed until our wedding day. So in conclusion, I'd like just to finish this up by saying, I've been in church for just about all my life, and God was equipping me to work in the church at a very young age. What I do here, I do because I believe God called and equipped me to do it. By his grace is the only way I've been able to endure the good, the bad, and the ugly. No one works in this ministry for money. It has to be a life calling of God. I've had 31 years experience serving with all kinds of churches, and would I do it again? I don't know, maybe, probably. I, you know, if I'm looking at the right day at the right time. But I consider it an honor to serve the Lord by serving his people. It's not always easy. I laugh when I hear people say, oh, it'd be so great to work in a church. I know that they're thinking that church jobs are stress-free jobs, but they're not. I don't think working in a church should be anything you choose for yourself. I believe it's a calling just as much as the pastor is being called to do it, to the ministry. My heart and Brian's heart is to be servants of the Lord. We like to serve the Lord behind the scenes. Tonight is a very rare moment where, for me, I'd rather serve the Lord by serving the pastors and other called to be in front as a support person. But tonight, God wanted you to see and hear from someone who serves behind the scenes. It's my privilege to serve the Lord at Grace Tabernacle since its beginning. And it has been a privilege to serve people because that is what the church is all about. You, the people loving God and learning to walk in love with one another. So I love God with all my heart. I love my husband and my family, and I love all of you too. So thank you. That's my story. Just everybody. I'm not used to that part of it. Thank you guys for coming. There are many other stories I did not share. All right. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.